One is through a legal approach, going to the courts and trying to get the courts to give the law a righteous interpretation. The second tract is political. Now, these two tracts are not mutually exclusive, obviously, but they are analytically distinct, and they help us get a sense of how the movement, which was really a collection of movements, proceeded. The theoretical concerns that swirled around the women's issue broke out in two ways, this legal and political way, in the 19th and early 20th centuries. Looking at the legal side of things, we see that suffragettes and women's rights enthusiasts tried to craft legal arguments under the Civil War amendments that would advance their goals. As we saw in the lecture that examined the Supreme Court's position on social Darwinism, the court was more inclined to cut slack to state legislatures when they were protecting women because of the special care that women deserved. The 14th Amendment was not used by the court to advance the position of women in society as much as to protect it, or at least protect it in the way that the court, the men of the court, thought best. The basic posture here was a definition of women as delicate flowers, the notion that they had to be protected from society. This is based on assumptions that go back to women, back to Winthrop and his conception of women's roles. And you see them in a variety of cases. We looked at the Mueller case, which upheld the regulation of hours that women could work in Oregon. Justice Brewer, in his opinion for the court, said, "Still again, history discloses the fact that woman has always been dependent on man. He established his control at the outset by superior strength, and his control in various forms with diminishing intensity has continued to the present. In the struggle for subsistence, she is not an equal contributor with her brother. Differentiated by these matters from the other sex, she is properly placed in a class by herself, and legislation designed for her protection may be sustained, even when like legislation is not necessary for men and could not be sustained. It is impossible to close one's eyes to the fact that she still looks to her brother and depends on him. That she is so constituted that she will rest upon and look to him for protection." This is the concept that the court carried with it. Her physical structure and a proper discharge of her maternal functions requires the state to protect her. Not merely for herself, but for the race. She must be protected from the greed of men. The two sexes differ in structure of body and in the functions to be performed by each, in the amount of physical strength and the capacity for long continued labor. Women need protection. In Raddus v. New York in 1924, now realize this is after the passage of the 19th Amendment, the suffrage amendment. The state of New York had prohibited the employment of women between the hours of 10 o'clock in the evening and 6 o'clock in the morning. Sutherland, who had struck down legislation guaranteeing a minimum wage for women in the Adkins case in 1923, as we saw in the last lecture, wrote for the court here and upheld the legislation in New York. He said that this kind of work could be especially detrimental to the health of women. The loss of a restful night's sleep cannot be fully made up by sleep in the daytime, especially in busy cities. The injurious consequences were thought by the legislature to bear more heavily against women than men, and considering their more delicate organism, there would seem to be good reason for so thinking. Another case, again, after the passage even of the 19th Amendment, Breedlove v. Suttles upheld a law allowing women, but not men, to avoid paying the poll tax, the tax that was associated with voting. In the view of the burdens necessarily borne by women for the preservation of the race, the state may reasonably exempt them from poll taxes. The laws of Georgia declare the husband to be the head of the family and the wife to be subject to him. To subject her to the levy would be to add to his burden.